Welcome to the deep dive. We wade through tons of sources so you don't have to, pulling out the really key stuff. And today, we're tackling a big one, something that, let's be honest, most of us dread: delivering feedback and having difficult conversations. You know that feeling, right? Stomach knots before a tough chat, or that like super awkward silence afterwards. But what if it didn't have to be that way? What if these could actually be, well, powerful moments?
That's exactly our mission today. Our sources are pretty clear on this. These tricky interactions, whether it's about performance or, you know, conflict, they can be handled well with composure, confidence, and crucially, empathy. We're aiming to pull out the strategies that turn these dreaded talks into real chances for growth and for stronger relationships too.
And this isn't just theory. These are skills you can use like right away. Think about someone like Jamie, new team lead. Got this brilliant engineer, Alex, who's suddenly missing deadlines. Jamie knows they need to talk to Alex, but just the thought is, well, terrifying. How do you even start that conversation without putting Alex on the defensive? How do you make sure it helps, not hurts? So, this deep dive, it's for Jamie, it's for you. If you're prepping for a tough meeting or trying to smooth things over with your team or just want to feel a bit less stressed in those awkward spots, we've got some really practical frameworks and insights coming up. Let's get into it.
Okay, so first off, why is feedback such a loaded word? Why the instant cringe? We tend to see it as criticism, right?
Yeah.
Judgment. But the sources we looked at, they frame it completely differently.
Yeah.
As the lifeline of professional development, really.
Exactly. It's the pulse of progress, as you said. Without it, people just plateau. Teams get stuck. Good intentions don't always land right without that corrective loop. It's not optional. It's oxygen.
Okay, so it's essential, but there's a catch, a big one. Get it right, and it clarifies things, builds trust, boosts performance. It's amazing. But get it wrong, and oh boy, defensiveness, resentment, people checking out, it can really backfire.
So the delivery is everything. The how matters just as much, maybe more, than the what.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why understanding the basic principles is so critical before you even think about specific techniques.
Right, and our sources. They break it down into 7 core ideas for giving and, importantly, receiving feedback well. Let's walk through them. First up, the big one. Focus on behavior, not the person. This is like the golden rule. It's so easy to slip into saying, you're careless, that's personal, it attacks character. Instead, try something like, I noticed a few inaccuracies in the report and some key points seem missing. Let's talk about how we can get the accuracy up next time. See the difference? Action, not identity.
Huge difference. It keeps the focus on something changeable, something concrete.
Exactly. Which leads right into number 2. Be specific, not general. Vague feedback like your presentation wasn't great is just useless, isn't it? What do you even do with that?
Right. It leaves people guessing, maybe even feeling defensive because they don't know what was wrong.
Yeah. So instead, your presentation was missing specific data for the recommendations. Next time, maybe include some concrete examples and figures. That gives them something clear to work on.
Much more helpful. Actionable.
Okay, third, deliver feedback promptly. This one feels obvious, but we often delay, right?
We do. Maybe because it's uncomfortable. But the longer you wait,
the less impact it has. Saying 2 months ago that project was late feels irrelevant, but yesterday's missed deadline impacted the client. Let's figure out what happened and how to prevent it next time. That's immediate. The learning connects directly.
Timing reinforces the link between the action and the feedback. Crucial.
Fourth principle, balance criticism with positive feedback. It can't all be negative.
No, that's just demotivating. People need to know what they're doing well, too.
Totally. So instead of just fix your communication, maybe try, I really appreciate how clearly you explain complex ideas. That's a real strength. I have noticed, though, that sometimes your emails could use a bit more detail to avoid confusion. Maybe we can work on adding clearer examples.
Acknowledging the positive first makes the constructive part easier to hear. It shows you see the whole picture.
Right. Number 5, encourage two-way communication. Feedback shouldn't be a monologue.
Absolutely not. It's a conversation, a dialogue.
So ditch the let me list your mistakes approach. Instead, try opening it up. Here's something I noticed. Can you share your perspective on that? I'd really like to understand your thinking.
That invites them in. It makes it collaborative, not accusatory.
Okay, number 6, maybe the foundation for all of this. Practice empathy and respect.
The cornerstone, really. You have to approach it with understanding.
Yeah, saying your mistake ruined the project is just damaging. But mistakes happen. Look, walk through what went wrong here and figure out how to avoid it going forward. That feels supportive, like you're on the same side.
It focuses on learning and solutions, not blame. makes all the difference.
And finally, number 7, which is about the other side of the coin. Receive feedback gracefully without defensiveness.
Just as critical, how you take feedback shapes the whole interaction.
For sure. That knee-jerk, that wasn't my fault, you don't get it, just shuts everything down. But a response like, okay, thanks for pointing that out. Can you help me understand exactly what I could do differently next time? That shows you're open, you're willing to learn. It takes maturity.
Absolutely. It keeps the door open for growth. So these principles, they really change the game. Think about Jamie and Alex again with the interruptions. Jamie could say something like, Alex, I noticed in the meeting today you were really enthusiastic with your ideas, which is great. We value your input.
Starting positive.
Okay.
But I also noticed a few times you jumped in before others finished speaking. It seemed to stop some folks from fully sharing their thoughts. Could you maybe try pausing a bit more next time? Give others space.
Focusing on behavior, specific, offering a solution. Nice. I think it'll help make sure everyone's ideas get heard clearly. And Alex, receiving it well.
Yeah, how would Alex respond ideally?
Ideally, something like, oh, thanks for mentioning that, Jamie. Honestly, I didn't even realize I was doing it. I'll definitely make an effort to slow down and listen more next time.
Wow. That whole exchange feels constructive, not confrontational.
Exactly. That's the power of applying these principles.
Okay, those principles are a great foundation, but sometimes, you know, the situation feels trickier, more complex, like you need a bit more structure.
That's where specific models come in really handy. Our sources highlighted a couple of proven frameworks that basically give you a roadmap, take some of the guesswork out.
Ah, like tools for the toolkit.
Precisely. We're talking about SBI, Situation Behavior Impact, and DSC, Describe, Express, Specify Consequences. They're designed to make feedback clearer, more effective, and frankly, less stressful to deliver, especially for those tougher conversations.
Okay, let's unpack SBI first. Situation Behavior Impact. Sounds pretty direct.
It is. Very clear. Very factual.
So, situation. That's setting the scene. Like, when and where.
Exactly. During yesterday's team meeting, or in the client call this morning.
Yeah.
Just a context.
Got it. Then behavior. Describe what you actually saw or heard. Stick to the facts.
Yes. Observable actions only. No interpretations. No judgments. You interrupted colleagues several times while they were speaking. Not, you were being rude.
Right. Factual. And impact. That's the consequence. The so what?
What was the result of that behavior? This led to some frustration? Or it meant we missed a key point? Focus on the effect.
Okay. So putting it all together for Alex interrupting. During yesterday's team meeting situation, you interrupted colleagues several times while they were speaking. Behavior. This seemed to cause some frustration and meant not everyone got to share their ideas fully. Impact.
Perfect. See how objective that is? It focuses purely on the observable situation, the specific behavior, and its direct result. That structure really helps minimize defensiveness because it's not about judging Alex's intentions or character. It's about a specific action and its effect.
That makes a lot of sense. It feels less personal, more about the process. Okay, now what about DESC? Describe, express, specify consequences. Sounds a bit more involved.
It can be. And it's especially useful when maybe there's a bit more emotion involved, or you need to be really clear about expectations.
Okay, so describe. Similar to SBI's behavior, just state the facts.
Pretty much. Objectively identify the behavior or situation. Let's use the late reports example for Jamie and Alex. Jamie might say, in recent weeks, your reports have consistently missed their deadlines. Just the facts.
Okay, then express. This is where feelings come in.
Yes, but using I statements. Share your concerns or feelings about the situation. I'm concerned because these delays are causing issues for the team and affecting our project timeline. It's about your perspective.
I'm concerned, not you're making me concerned. Subtle but important. Okay, specify.
This is the clear request. What change do you need to see? Be explicit. I'd appreciate it if you could submit your reports by the agreed deadline moving forward. No ambiguity.
Right, crystal clear ask. And finally, consequences. What happens if things change or don't?
Exactly. Clarify the outcomes. Ideally, focus on the positive consequences of the desired change. Meeting these deadlines will really help the team stay on track, reduce stress for everyone, and improve our overall productivity. You can also mention negative consequences if necessary, but leading with the positive is often more effective.
Okay, let's put DSC together for Jamie in the late reports. In recent weeks, your reports have consistently missed their deadlines, describe. I'm concerned because these delays are creating knock-on problems for the rest of the team and impacting our overall timeline, express. I really need you to submit reports by the agreed deadline from now on, specify. When the reports are on time, it helps everyone stay on track and reduces a lot of stress across the team. Consequences.
Nicely done. That covers all the bases clearly and assertively, but still respectfully.
So SBI or DESC, how do you choose?
Good question. SBI is often great for more straightforward, behavior-focused feedback, where you don't need a deep dive into feelings. It's quick, factual. DAC tends to be better for situations that might be more emotionally charged, or where you absolutely need to lay out clear expectations and the why behind them, including the consequences. It allows for a bit more depth.
Okay, that helps differentiate. Maybe a couple more quick examples.
Sure. For SBI, maybe about interrupting a client. During yesterday's client call situation, you jumped in while the client was explaining their concern a few times. Behavior. I noticed the client seemed a bit frustrated by that, and it made the conversation feel a little awkward. Impact.
Could you try letting them finish their thoughts completely next time?
Clear, direct, and DESC for something like report errors. Right. Recently, I've noticed several errors cropping up in the monthly reports. Describe. I'm feeling concerned because accuracy is critical for maintaining client trust. Express. Moving forward, could you please build in some extra time to double-check all the data before submitting? Specify. Ensuring that accuracy will really help us maintain our strong reputation and keep clients happy. Consequences.
Both models seem really useful for structuring those potentially awkward conversations. But, you know, even with the best frameworks, we're still human. Emotions happen.
Absolutely. You can have the perfect script, but feelings, yours or theirs, can still flare up. Frustration, defensiveness, maybe even anger. It's natural.
Yeah, you can't just script emotions out.
No, but the key insight from our sources is that managing those emotions, staying professional, that's a skill you can actually learn. It's about emotional intelligence. It's not about not feeling things, but about recognizing those feelings and choosing how you respond rather than just reacting instinctively.
Okay, so how do we do that? What are the strategies?
Well, first, it's about recognizing and understanding your own emotional triggers. What pushes your buttons?
Like feeling criticized unfairly or getting unexpected bad news.
Exactly. Knowing your triggers is the first step. Then, when you feel that heat rising, the advice is pause. Just take a breath. Acknowledge the feeling internally. Okay, I'm feeling defensive right now. That tiny pause can make a huge difference.
Just acknowledging it helps dial it down.
It often does. It gives you that split second to choose your response instead of just blurting something out.
Okay, what's next?
Stay objective. Separate the facts from your feelings. It's so easy to jump to interpretations, right?
Yeah.
They think I'm incompetent.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Instead, pull back to the facts. Okay, they mentioned specific inaccuracies in the report. Let's focus on those specific issues. Ground yourself in what was actually said or done, not your interpretation of it.
Facts, not stories we tell ourselves. Got it.
Third, use active listening to diffuse tension. Really listen to understand, not just to plan your rebuttal.
So reflect back what you're hearing.
Yes. Things like, okay, just so I'm clear, are you saying the way I phrased that request caused stress? Or, I hear your concern about the delays. Let's talk about solutions. It shows respect, validates them, and calms the waters.
Makes sense. And your own language matters too, right?
Hugely. That's the fourth point. Use neutral language and maintain a calm tone. Your delivery can escalate or de-escalate things massively.
So avoid accusatory language.
Definitely. Stick to cooperative phrases. I understand your perspective. How can we find a solution together? Or can you help me see this from your viewpoint? Keep your tone steady and respectful.
What if things get really heated, though?
That's number five. Don't be afraid to take breaks if necessary. It's not unprofessional. It's often the most professional thing to do.
Suggesting a pause.
Yeah. This is clearly important and maybe a bit difficult. Would it help to take 5 minutes and come back to this? Or let's just pause for a moment to collect our thoughts. A short break can prevent things from spiraling.
Good call. Anything else?
The final point circles back. Empathy and respect really do go a long way. Even if you disagree, acknowledging the other person's feelings and perspective builds trust.
Like saying, I can see this is important to you, or I appreciate you being open about this, even though it's tough.
Exactly. It shows you're trying to understand. Even in disagreement.
So imagine getting some really harsh feedback, maybe unexpected. How would this look in practice?
Okay, so you feel that gut punch, maybe anger or defensiveness welling up. Instead of lashing out, you pause. You calmly ask for specifics. Thanks for sharing that. To make sure I understand, could you give me a concrete example of what you observed?
Buying time, getting clarity.
Right. Then maybe you acknowledge the emotion and suggest a pause. Okay, I appreciate you raising this. I can feel it's hitting me a bit, and I want to respond thoughtfully. Could we take a quick break?
Taking control of the situation.
Then you come back, composed. You listen actively. Maybe paraphrase. Okay, so if I understand correctly, the main issue was X and Y. And then you shift to solutions. Let's discuss how I can specifically address those points.
Turning a potential blow-up into a constructive conversation. That's powerful. Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Conflict. Nobody enjoys it, right? Especially at work. It's just awkward, stressful.
Most people would rather do anything than face conflict head-on.
But the sources we looked at were pretty clear.
Yeah.
It's also kind of inevitable, isn't it? And maybe not always bad.
That's the crucial reframe. Conflict isn't necessarily a sign that things are broken. When managed well, it can actually be a source of innovation and better understanding. Think about it. If everyone always agrees, you might miss better ideas. Differing perspectives, when explored constructively, can lead to stronger outcomes. It's a natural part of working together.
Okay, so conflict isn't the enemy, but unmanaged conflict is. How do we manage it constructively?
First step, according to our sources, identify and clarify the core issue. Don't get bogged down in emotional accusations like, you never listen.
Yeah, that goes nowhere fast.
Instead, try to pinpoint the underlying problem. Okay, it seems like the main point of disagreement here is how we're prioritizing these project tasks. Keep it focused on the issue, not the personalities.
Makes sense. Then what?
Practice active listening and validation. Again, really hear the other person out without interrupting. Acknowledge their perspective, even if you disagree.
Like, okay, I hear you saying you feel completely overloaded right now. That sounds really tough. Let's talk about how we can fix that.
Exactly. That validation can be incredibly disarming. It shows you're taking their concerns seriously.
And maintaining your own calm is key, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Number three is maintain a calm, professional tone. Your composure sets the stage. Using phrases like, I understand your point of view, let's try to find common ground, or I appreciate you sharing that, let's see how we can resolve this together.
It signals collaboration, not combat.
Right. Which leads to number four, explore solutions collaboratively. It's not about winning the argument.
It's about finding a way forward.
Yes. Ask open-ended questions.
Yeah.
What potential solutions do you see? Or let's brainstorm a few options together. Involve the other person in finding the fix. That builds buy-in.
Okay, so you find a potential solution together. Then what?
Agree on clear next steps. This is crucial for accountability. Don't leave it vague.
So nailed on specifics, like, okay, so we've agreed, I'll provide the data by Tuesday, and you'll draft the proposal by Thursday. Does that sound right?
Precisely. Clarity prevents future misunderstandings. Everyone knows who's doing what by when.
And there's one more step.
Yes. Number six, follow up and check in. Don't just assume the conflict is resolved and walk away.
Circle back later.
Yeah. A simple, hey, just want to check in on how that new task distribution is working out. Shows you're committed to the resolution and keeps communication lines open. It reinforces trust.
Let's picture this. Say two team members are arguing about workload. How does a manager use these steps?
Okay, manager steps in. First, clarify. All right, it sounds like the core issue is the current task allocation feels unfair or unbalanced. So you're at a better way. Then validate. I understand you're both feeling stressed by the workload, and I appreciate you bringing this up. Maintain calm. Let's focus on finding a fair solution here. Then collaborate. What ideas do you both have for distributing these tasks more effectively? Maybe we reassign X or adjust the timeline for Y.
Getting them involved.
Then agree on steps. Okay, so we'll try reassigning task X to Jamie starting tomorrow, and we'll revisit the priority of task Y. Agreed. And finally, follow up. Let's quickly touch base next Monday to see how this feels.
See, conflict managed, leading to a potential improvement. Much better than letting it fester. You know, we spent a lot of time on the corrective side of feedback, the difficult conversations, which is super important. But our sources really emphasized something else too, didn't they? The power of the positive.
Absolutely. Effective feedback isn't just about fixing problems. It's equally, maybe even more, about recognizing strengths, celebrating wins, and genuinely appreciating people's efforts.
It's easy to forget that part, or maybe just do it superficially.
Right. But meaningful praise. Our sources show it needs to be specific, sincere, and timely. When it is, it's not just nice. It actively builds relationships, boosts morale, and shapes a positive culture where people want to do their best.
So it's a strategic tool, not just fluff. How do we give praise that actually lands and makes a difference?
Well, the first point is key. Make praise specific and genuine. Generic stuff like, good job today, often feels empty.
Yeah, like you weren't really paying attention.
Exactly. Contrast that with, wow, the way you handled that client's tough questions in the meeting was fantastic. Your calm explanations really seem to reassure them. That shows you notice the specific skill and its impact.
Much more meaningful. Okay, what else?
Deliver praise promptly. Just like with corrective feedback, timeliness matters.
Don't wait for the annual review.
Please don't. Saying, great presentation yesterday. Your points were so clear and really helped us move forward, has way more impact than mentioning it vaguely months later. Capture the moment.
Okay, specific and timely. Got it.
Third, highlight the impact and results. Connect their effort to a positive outcome.
So not just nice slides, but...
But the extra effort you put into making those slides so clear and visual, it made the whole presentation much more compelling and definitely helped us get the client's approval faster. People love knowing their work mattered.
That makes sense. Connect the dots for them.
Fourth, match recognition to individual preferences. This is about knowing your people.
Ah, the public versus private thing.
Exactly. Some people love being recognized in a team meeting. Others would cringe and prefer a quiet word or an email. Tailor the praise delivery.
So you might say privately, hey, I just wanted to personally thank you for stepping up on that urgent issue yesterday. Really saved us. Or publicly, team, I want to give a shout out to Alex for the amazing work on the project report. Truly outstanding.
Knowing your audience makes the recognition feel more personal and effective.
Good point. What else?
Encourage peer-to-peer recognition. This is huge for building a positive, collaborative culture. It shouldn't always have to come from the boss.
Like mentioning what you heard from others.
Yeah. Hey, I heard from a few team members how much they appreciated you helping them out during that crazy deadline crunch last week. Sounds like you were a real lifesaver. Mm. Or, your presentation clearly impressed Sarah. She mentioned how well you explained the new strategy. That kind of peer feedback is incredibly powerful.
It reinforces that teamwork vibe. Okay, one last one.
Final point. Use praise to reinforce desired behaviors. Link the positive feedback directly to the kinds of actions and values you want to see more of.
So connect it to the bigger picture.
Exactly. Your proactive approach in flagging that potential issue early, that made a massive difference in keeping the project on track. That's exactly the kind of foresight we need. Or... the attention to detail you showed in that client report really reflected well on the whole team. Keep up that great work. It tells them what specific actions are valued.
Okay, let's paint a picture. Someone named Maya works late to hit a deadline. How does meaningful praise look?
Instead of just, thanks for staying late, you could say, Maya, I really want to acknowledge the extra effort you put in these last couple of nights. Staying late to ensure every detail in that proposal was perfect significantly boosted its quality. In fact, the client specifically commented on how thorough it was. Your dedication directly led to that positive impression. Thank you. It made a huge difference to the project's success.
Wow. Specific, highlights impact, timely, genuine. You can feel how much more motivating that is.
That's the goal, making people feel seen, valued, and understood for their contributions.
Okay, what a journey we've been on. From the dread of difficult conversations to actually seeing them and feedback in general as this powerful toolkit. We've covered the core principles, dug into frameworks like SBI and DESC, talked about managing those tricky emotions, turning conflict into something productive, and just now, the crucial role of genuine praise. We used Jamie and Alex as examples, but really, this stuff applies everywhere.
Absolutely. The big takeaway, connecting all these threads from our sources, is that feedback, whether it's guiding improvement or celebrating success, it shouldn't be feared. It's fundamental. It's the bedrock of continuous learning, building respect, and ultimately achieving excellence together. These aren't just manager skills. They're essential skills for anyone wanting to build strong professional relationships and succeed.
So as we wrap up, here's something to think about for yourself. Consider one challenging conversation that might be on your horizon, or maybe just one piece of positive feedback you've been meaning to give someone but haven't gotten around to. How might applying just one thing we talked about today, maybe focusing strictly on behavior or using DESC to structure your thoughts or simply being specific with your praise, how might that one small change shift the outcome? What could be the ripple effect of making that single interaction just a little bit better?